welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network, where we look at the week's technology news and what's gone on and what hasn't gone on. And I have absolutely no idea what's gone on because I've been stuck away in a hotel room, and I've also not had Google Chrome sync with all the stuff that I saved during the week. So this machine has nothing on it, and the machine that has got all the stuff on it is out in the hall in a bag, so... I'm making it up as I go along. The people that aren't making it up as they go along are the fantastic panel that we have. Last minuter, top left, but nonetheless for it, please don't criticise him. Mr. Christopher Woods from The Nonsense Show. How you doing, man?
Hello, everyone.
Thank you.
I'm not bad.
Thank you for stepping in at the last minute.
It's all right. It's a pleasure.
Excellent. Good week?
So far, busy. Good. But you can't really complain when you're busy, can you?
We like busy.
Exactly.
I've been busy all week, and I'm going to be busy for the next 14 weeks because I've dropped a contract. Huzzah! Beers on me this weekend.
Yeah. Well done.
Christopher, Nonsense Show, just the three at the weekend, back on form, mate.
Thank you very much. Thank
quality,
you.
Quality show. Some real trivial crap talked about in a fine way.
Of course.
Good, man.
We only talk about the finest nonsense in the most irreverent of styles.
Utter rubbish that,
only
that
the finest
the
trivial
internet.
Crap.
Only the finest nonsense.
It's high quality crap.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
of course, the antithesis to your show.
The underbelly of the net.
Yes, with a satin veneer.
Next to him, someone else who took a very good show but not crap, is Mr. David Dean. How you doing, mate? I confess I'm a geek.
Yeah, thank you, Ewan. Yeah. Yeah, show 107, I think, in the can.
107. Now, the thing is that 107 as in I've been doing it for 2 years weekly? Or is that 107
yes.
as in Will Green? I've been doing it for 25 years, but only done 107 shows.
My lifetime ambition is to catch up with Will before the year is out. So I think I can.
You'll That's catch up 30 odd behind. You'll catch up with Will in about another 34 episodes, mate. Greedy's pulled out of the Mac show tomorrow because he wants to focus on his own podcast, he says. As in do one. Beneath David, we got Sarah. How you doing, Mrs.?
I'm very well, thank you.
Our resident web developer and web administrator. The week's been good to you or not?
I've been a lady of leisure this week, although I've been doing all things techie. So good. I've been learning about Samba. Well, not really learning about, but getting frustrated with Samba, learning various interesting things about Windows 7, and built a media PC, which was a lot of fun.
Oh. Now you've kicked you've been sending out a couple of tweets and you kicked the crap out of Samba, it's fair to say. You're not happy.
No, I've got some issues with Windows 7 as well. Learned some interesting things about the difference between home premium and professional, which I'm not happy about, and nor a lot of people.
Right. Okay. Just so we shouldn't get you started. That's the blue touch paper this evening.
No, I don't need a soapbox invitation.
Right. And last but by no means least, from the far west coast of America, Mr. Eric Lanigan.
Hey guys.
Larrigan with an L-A-R-I-G-A-N.
Now people already have enough trouble spelling it.
Good week, mate?
Pretty good.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
Sorry,
pal. We got even CES stuff to talk about today, don't we?
Ooh. The no price, no date show. It wasn't a great event, was it?
Oh, the CES? No. In fact, the story, everywhere, the story was that there was no story. There very little happened of note, you know, minor evolutionary baby steps in TV technology and what that's about it.
Mm. You predicted 3D TVs and 3D TVs akimbo, but the one thing that was apparently really prevalent there, according to Barry Collins from PC Pro, was 3D printers were making everything from a set of shoes through to matchsticks that didn't work.
Now, see, I just don't see the point in those. Are any of you guys on board with that? With the 3D, like it's like making it out of like a plastic or a wax mold, right? So it's not like you can't make electronics with it.
I think
it's early days, isn't it? It's like having dot matrix, and we haven't really got the quality bit out yet. I think there's a massive future for them.
I think for prototyping, it's a really good idea, but I'm not sure about beyond that point.
Yeah, because you guys, do you ever envision like a day when we are going to have like a 3D printer in our home and we're going to print out a physical item? I mean, what would you print that's going to be a solid block of plastic?
Sculptio, we weren't going to talk about this, but let's talk about it now we're on it. Sculptio is a firm this week who has trotted out a service whereby you take a picture using their iPhone application, you send it to them over the net, they will manufacture the thing that you sent them, providing you give them approximate dimensions, and they will send it back to you. I could literally, here's my screen wash bottle for cleaning my screens. I could take a picture of that. They will make that for me as a 3D print and send it back to me.
And how valuable that would be.
I think this is a whole new copyright era, because the problem is you go in a shop, you look at a vase in Harrods or something like that, you think, God, that's gorgeous. And then you take a picture of it, and you get one back through the post. I mean, I'm sure it's probably going to be about £500 more than the vase was. But, you know, there's a point there that actually you're taking copyrighted materials. You know, you go and take a picture of Rodin's The Thinker or something like that, wherever it is, and send it off to them, and they send you a thinker back through the post.
Well, that's kind of my point, though, because I can't imagine any physical item that exists in the real world that you can't already just duplicate from a picture and from human hands making a mass production mold. I don't know what on a personal level, like a one-time off printer is going to do that. What object would I'd rather like a sculpture would be better as a small plastic figurine than it would as the original thing. So that's the problem I have.
No, dude, Rodin's Thinker's about 7 foot tall, isn't it? I mean, you're not going to get this in your living room.
It's going to be this big, like in the little printer. It's going to shrink it down.
I've got a use case, and I'll tell you what it is.
Good man.
So, past week has been one of frustration trying to find the right size Allen key, because I had to take apart an Apple keyboard, and they use the smallest Allen keys known to man. And I literally bought 3 sets of Allen keys from different places after work. So everywhere I shut in. So 1, I'm running to shops. 2, they don't have them. 3, I'm buying them anyway, just in case. Ended up, it's like a 1.25 mil size. Anyway, found the right one from Maple and other stores are available. It would have been so useful to just go, I'll have that template for that Allen key, print, and I could have just taken the thing apart in one night.
I'm banging around in the background, and the reason I'm banging around in the background is I have got the set that you want, mate. Here you go. It is from...
Thanks. Well, if I'd known you had one... Oh, jeez.
Work Zone. There you go. It is a little tiny miniature set. Look. Here we go.
Oh, very fancy.
And it's got down to T2 on torque and a couple of little triangular things that I don't know what the proper name for them is. And it comes with a little screwdriver that's got a bendy bit here, look, that you can put in the end of the screwdriver for screwing round corners, and a set of tweezers, and a set of wire clippers. This is hard doing this in reverse. That was £4, and that was from Aldi.
I remember that. You Aldi. That was your cool thingy some time ago, wasn't it?
Bloody Aldi's fantastic, mate. I've got 2 tripods that are aluminium, coming in a carry case. They were £12 in Aldi, and I use them professionally, so there you go.
Good stuff.
Aldi's got tons of stuff.
Thinking forward a bit, you may have seen the footage of the Kinect Research Labs, and they've built this essentially 3D modeling software. You can take the Kinect around an object and it'll map it in 3D space.
Yeah.
And that's in Oxford. So good on them.
Mm.
British R&D. Oh,
did you say using 3D Microsoft Kinect?
Yeah, the one that's coming out for the PC. They built some prototype software which just uses the IR grid combined with the stereo cameras, and it can, all you've got to do is just walk around an object, and it tracks its own position in 3D space and builds up a 3D image as you walk around. Obviously, the more passes, the higher the resolution. They did it on BBC Click.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Isn't there an exhibition at the moment in the Natural History Museum where you sit down and they map your face in 3D and you see yourself in 3D, and they reckon it's going to be really good for maxillofacial surgery and stuff, so that they can reconstruct cleft palates and burn victims and those things to a far higher degree.
Wow.
But that's supposed to be really good. Natural History Museum, right? That was on the TV the other morning. I've been staying in hotels too long. I've been watching TV.
It's pretty cool.
I think 3D printers, if they're not extortionate, could be really cool. And I saw one of the stories from CES. They got a pair of shoes, proper women's shoes, stick your feet in, with fancy frills all over them, that have been printed on a 3D printer. This isn't just kind of block resin stuff anymore. These are a pair of functioning shoes, size 6, that you stick on your feet and away you go.
Okay.
How many days did they take to print?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
and they're like, and they're like a neutral tan wax color. I mean, what?
No, they were black.
What is the benefit of that?
Yeah, you just that horrible resin waxy kind of not yellow, but not really white either.
Did I miss something here? Did we suddenly go from paper to other materials in the printer?
Well, I was going to say, I hope a 3D printer doesn't mean that you have to wear glasses and stare at a page.
Paper in them.
No, 3D printers have a resiny, squirty jet wax thing, don't they?
I know the industrial ones do, but I thought we were talking about commercial regular printers.
Chat room wants to know if you're drinking Guinness tonight, Sarah.
No, it's, as Chris said, Coca-Cola. Other brands are available.
But it's not. Is there anything else in the Coca-Cola to fortify it?
Just Coca-Cola.
Well, it should be. Especially
are
if
we drinking tonight?
Well,
the Pope swear.
That's what you mean by drinking.
if we're drinking tonight, I have some real ale. It's a train ale.
As long as no one's got any mead, we're fine.
Yeah, no
from
mead.
Buntingford Brewery.
Buntingford, that's Cambridge, isn't it?
Other breweries are available.
No. Of course, yes, other breweries are available. I highly recommend all of them. They are in Hearts.
Hertfordshire, there we go. Buntingford in Hertfordshire, I should know that.
My home county.
Buntingford Brewery. Yes, it's the 92 Squadron Battle of Britain class.
I'm having a cup of tea.
Just to prove it is real, I shall open it on camera.
Should we get back and talk to the things that we planned to talk about anyway? Kodak's died a death. Kodak has finally given up the ghost. It's flatlined. Their Wi-Fi cameras that they said that they were going to do are not going to save them from a fate worse than death. Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
They named digital camera as well, didn't they?
Did you hear apparently that they've also launched, I don't know how they've managed to do this, but at the same time, they've also launched a lawsuit against Samsung claiming that they breached some of their patents.
Everyone's suing Samsung.
Well, the patents thing is a big thing, isn't it? Because they really need the patents stuff to save themselves. They were going to sell all their patents off. Yeah. And that's failed. No one wants to buy them. And now they're trying to sue with them, and they're not going to... That dog's not going to hunt either. So
it's their last chance, isn't it, really?
They're gone. They're absolutely gone. I think they're officially gone now, aren't they?
They've gone from Chapter 11 to bankruptcy, then that's pretty terminal.
What about all those little machines in shops?
What little machines?
The ones that print photos out. All the Kodak ones.
I haven't seen one of those for a long time.
One of the articles that I have here, they might be more popular like in the, you know, like little pharmacies and convenience stores in the States. But from the articles I read, that's like their only business that they have left. And I can imagine that that's decreasing ever rapidly as people just are happy with digital copies.
Yeah, I mean, who gets their photos printed anymore? Any of you guys?
No.
Incredibly rarely.
No. I'd have a good enough camera to take photos with.
Oh, can we have a violin tone for Chris? Boo-hoo.
I could say the same thing, really. I mean, I've only got a little point and shoot and the phone on my camera.
No, I mean, I've not had any. Chat room... Anyone else get their photographs printed out? I don't. Mother-in-law, there we go. My mother-in-law does it all the time, but hey.
And they use the cards app on the iPhone, no doubt.
Yeah, my mum's got one of the EasyShare docks, which she uses with her camera. It's Kodak.
Who's calling in? Kerry Holtzman. Sorry, Kerry.
You should know, of all people.
We kind of sorted. I asked him and said, asked if he was ready. There we go. Eric's jumping down the side. Oh, I hate using a mouse with delay.
It's a shame, really, because we haven't spoken to him in absolutely ages.
No, it would have been nice if he'd come on, but never mind. He had his chance. But apparently the pest exterminator's coming round to his house to kill something, so he had to help him.
It's not Kerry.
No, it's not. My Kodak's problem was that they always were the big fish in film, and they did... a decent quality film at a reasonable price that they pushed out to the punters. Very high margins on that film because it doesn't cost as much as they were charging to make the film that they gave out. And their photo repro services and those kind of things were embedded as franchises within chemists and those kind of thing. And when that disappeared, they hadn't got a clue. They hadn't got anything else to go to.
Mm. I mean,
I was just going to say, we had a show a year ago, nearly, I would have said, where Chris Dick was on the photo show. There was Alex Fox and myself and Kyle. And the title of the show was Coda Grown. And that was the point, was that the Kodak film that you produced, you stuck it in your camera and you're never quite sure what kind of tones you got out. Sometimes it would be a bit green, sometimes it would be a bit blue, sometimes it would be a bit red, but you never got consistent. It wouldn't be so bad if, you know, you knew what you were going to get out of it. There used to be a film called Ilford FP1, and Ilford FP1 was designed as a black and white film that would go through colour process and still be developed. But the point was, when you put it through the colour process, all the information that was contained in the black and white on the nitrous would come out in completely different ways, and you get blues and reds and pinks and all that kind of stuff, and you never knew what was going to come out. But that was the beauty of sticking it through the colour process. But the thing was, that's what you got with Kodachrome. Kodachrome was a crap film. It was no good to shoot professionally with at all. I always shot with Fuji. I never went to Kodachrome. And Fuji had an eye on the future. They had a digital program. They had a way of extricating themselves from a very high profit film margin business that they couldn't keep and couldn't sustain because no one wanted to buy it anymore. I went to a function probably about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, and the guy's shooting on film, and he said, I said, why on earth are you shooting on film? And he said, because that's what's making sure that your face isn't green and your hair isn't purple. And I just looked at him and said, you're a dinosaur, mate, and walked away, because that was the film. It wasn't him.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, talking of Fuji, I mean, Fuji, that was the first make of digital camera that I bought, which was now 13 years ago.
Right, Fuji have made quality film for a very long period of time. Ilford have made quality film for a very long period of time. Kodak made film for the average punter that, as long as you were shooting with the sun over your left shoulder, you got decent results from it. And that was it.
Speaking of just a random a remnant of the Kodak versus Fuji film days, you guys remember when it was the phrase was, make it a Kodak moment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember there was as a kid, we had a theme park in Tampa called Busch Gardens. I mean, it's still there. It's not like a Disney World, but it's there. And they had little sponsored signs that would go up in little particularly picturesque photo spots that would say, make it a Kodak moment. And it was like the Kodak logo. And then a few years later, I went back and it was like they changed it to a Fujifilm opportunity or something. It was like, it was such a reverse. They changed all the Kodak logos to Fuji, and they tried to squeeze it into that same slogan, but it just does not come out right.
No.
You know when it all started going wrong? When they stopped doing those little magic cubes, flash.
What, the ones Kodak that spun around on the top of your camera? Yeah. Now, that means that, unless I'm wrong here, David, that means you had a 110 format camera.
I did, an Instamatic Kodak.
Yeah, because you put the cubes on those things and you had to manually turn them around to get them to fire off the next one.
About a pound of flash, I think it was.
Yeah, I remember those.
Oh, I've never even, I can vaguely picture those that I've seen in a picture, but what was it like it would spark? Like the motion of the turn would make the flash?
No.
It was a proper flash bulb in there, but when you turn the film, the little cube turned around for another flash for the next photo. You had four on a cube.
Oh, they were the disposable flash bulbs.
Yeah. Here we go. Okay. I have got just the thing. I bought one of. I went to see a guy called Paul Kirchhell last week at the London Mac User Group, and he's an iPad artist. And he told me to buy a brush that's like an inductive brush that you can use on the iPad. Absolutely stunning thing. I had to play with it. I bought one. Here we go. But this is the box that it came in. That was effectively a 110 camera, Eric. It was a big, long, thin thing like that. Mm. And the one I had...
Actually, mine was a 126, I think.
I got given one by my parents for learning to tie my own shoes at the age of 7. And they bought me, and it began with a T, and they used to do film processing as well. I can't even remember the name. But basically, you flip the thing open like that, and it would make a V-shape here. And you'd line it up and take your picture. But on the top, there was a hot shoe, and you could put a cube in, and when you spun it round, it made contact with the firing mechanism. And so when you pressed, it fired just the front one, and there was four in the cube as you spun it round. And then you take the cube and throw it away. Yeah.
Found a link. It's in the chat room.
It's in the chat room. I shall get the picture and do it. But I mean, as far as Eric's concerned, the 110 format, he thinks, is electrical. I mean, it really is
that bad.
Then they
went to disc. They invented disc, didn't they? 15 to a disc.
Here we go.
Oh, disc cameras.
Yeah, they were the one and onlys.
Oh, I can't open it.
Did anyone here have an? I never had one. Did you have an Advantix? That was sort of the last pitch.
APS.
Film. APS, is that?
Yeah, my father had one of those.
It had like the three stages. The
photo system, yeah.
Yeah, like you could swap out the film.
You got panoramic, didn't you? And
yeah,
different format photos.
Yeah. It was called cropping.
No, but it did photos in three formats, didn't it?
No.
You could choose.
It took one picture and then it cropped it.
Well, okay.
what was the camera type where the film came in cartridges that had little spools either side?
Yeah, 110, 126.
That was 110, yeah.
Was it? Oh, yeah. Wow, I had one of those.
I had a 126, a bit squarer, I think. Even older.
I didn't have a 126.
Well, so speaking of Kodak, they actually may have missed a whole new generation of products, because one of the things that came out of CES was the phone manufacturers, especially HTC, want to usher in the death of the pocket point and shoot and just put that equivalent quality into every cell phone.
Did you guys see the Polaroid from last week? Polaroid have manufactured effectively something that's a slight bit larger than a current iPhone, and they've put a pop-out lens on the end of it. It's got a variable ISO on it, and this thing will shoot three times optical zoom. So you've got optical zoom as opposed to digital, which is significantly better, and it shoots 16 megapixels, which is too much probably, but megapixels is the game. And we talked about it on last week's photo show, but the thing that's interesting about it is it's got a WCDMA wireless in it, it's got a GSM wireless in it, it's got Bluetooth, it's got Wi-Fi, it's got GPS, and it's got an FM radio transmitter in it as well for always-on connectivity to the net. And there's functionality to put applications in it, because the backside of it is Android-based, and you can open up a Flickr application for Android, and you can take the images that you've just shot on the camera and boost it straight up. That is a phenomenal way forward for the camera industry, except the fact that, speaking to Chris Forsman, who sat and handled it there on the photo show last week, he said it kind of feels a little bit like it should have been a prototype rather than a production model. Just poor execution, typical. Great
aren't
idea,
they better
poor
off
execution.
Just giving their technology to a HTC or whatever, and then people putting Polaroid technology into good Android phones.
One of the points that Alex Fox made on the show was, let's get HTC to talk to Canon and Nikon and see what comes out of that conversation, and you could be talking some killer products.
Yeah.
And Sony definitely gets Carl's ass, doesn't it? So,
yeah. I think
I'm just looking at a picture of it. It's quite bizarre having an email button on a camera.
A what button?
There's a rendering of the screen on the backside, and it's basically just your stock Android. It's bizarre. You've got camera, email, album and apps. It's very and a calculator.
It's a full Android phone, effectively.
Very strange.
But because of the fact it's got room for a data card or a GSM card, etc., you've got connectivity to the net, and you've got exactly what I said 2 years ago, the compact camera market has got to embrace Flickr. And that was long before Instagram had come along. And hell, it really needs to embrace Instagram, because that's like the most popular posting point.
If you go into a big box electrical store these days, the range of cameras and camcorders has shrunk to about 10% of what it was 3 or 4 years ago. There's no market there now. It's all phones. Apart from your pro stuff.
I think the interesting thing was there was also a story. I mean, I'm sorry to rehash what was on the photo show last week, but the interesting thing is the size of the camera market compared to the size of the phone market and what each person is chasing, given the fact that one's got a camera in it and the other one's now potentially putting a phone in it. Samsung said that they wanted to quadruple their compact camera output in the next 12 months. How many units do you think that makes it? They want to quadruple their the compact camera output in the next 12 months. How many units do you think they're going to go to?
1 million. Worldwide.
500,000.
Jeez.
So,
and that's quadrupling.
They want to quadruple to 500,000.
Yeah.
Now,
jeepers.
From 125,000, obviously.
What's the view? What's the current worldwide view on the Nokia N800? It's a passable cell phone that's not got a big reach at all in the cell phone market. Would that be fair?
The Lumia special. Or the N?
The 800, the N800. No, the Lumia. Sorry, the Lumia. Yes, Lumia. You're right, the Lumia.
I don't think any of the Nokia phones are that special.
How many of those do you think they're going to sell a quarter this year?
100,000.
1 million.
Oh.
Nokia, which is a very low player in the cell phone market, is going to sell 100, 800 Lumias.
And 48 million iPads this year, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's 1 million units is a weekend at the Fifth Avenue Apple store for iPads. And then
they're going to have to start letting you print your Nokia phone with a 3D printer.
Oh, there's a thought.
Yeah.
And Samsung is going to quadruple its output to 500,000 units per annum. So you clearly shouldn't be making a camera that's got a cell phone in it. You should be making a cell phone that's got a proper camera in it if you want to challenge in that market. And that's where Polaroid, I think, have really hit on. But they've got no deals for the phone part.
Yeah, no one's going to pay 400 quid for a camera, are they, that happens to have a phone in it?
No, it's got a slot where you can stick a card. It hasn't got a deal with a phone supplier. There's no deal with AT&T for data and all that kind of stuff.
But how many people buy unlocked phones? Not many, not in relation to how many contracted phones.
I think you find out iPhone-wise, I think there's probably a lot more for iPhone than there is any other market. I mean, mine's unlocked, and most of the people I know are unlocked on their iPhone. So.
Mm. Yeah, mine is too, but it's obviously not an iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. Never mind. See you, Kodak. Thanks for everything. I mean,
it's sad, though.
What did Kodak do? They made photography a public event. Because they, you know, in the 30s, they actually sold cameras and they sold photographic equipment that was decent quality and was cheap and was viable for the average user in the street, and that's it.
But the digital cameras were never any good, were they?
Chopped up. No, they've always been crap.
So I think we should take this opportunity for one last Kodak moment of silence.
Soper and Pippa, big story of the week. Jimmy Wales decided to take down Wikipedia and say it's not available, but there was a hack out there. You could find a way of getting to it if you really wanted to, apparently, and getting the English version. But all the English-speaking sites went down. Soper and Pippa have been dealt a bit of a blow, apparently, because haven't the sponsors pulled out and said that they're not going to back it anymore?
Yeah.
18 senators changed their mind, apparently.
Over Jimmy Wales and Wikipedia.
Wikipedia saves the internet.
Not quite. The stories that I've been reading this morning say that the RIAA, the MPAA, and even the senators, especially Leahy, who's sponsoring the bill, they're not retreating, they're reloading, unfortunately. So they pretty much, they're already on the version 3.0 of SOPA, and they're still working at it, and they still want it to go through, and they still want to win back the support by doing things like removing the DNS blocking requirements. But overall, it's still something that is so bad it would prevent any of the next YouTube, the next Wikipedia, the next Facebook, and even any of those from happening if it were to pass. So we've still got a big problem to deal with.
I mean, SOPA for me is something that I find a good idea done badly.
Well, now what's the good idea?
Well, the good idea is that you protect people who've got user content that's being ripped off by pirates, and I've got no issue with that. I don't do it myself.
Say that again? I don't think that came out right.
Well, the
protect who?
The idea of SOPA is to stop those people who make available pirated content.
Right.
However,
on the user-generated sites.
However, the problem is the way in which it's implemented means that they can take down what the hell they like whenever they want.
Well, the problem is the way it's implemented is that it simply does not do anything to stop piracy. The people who are the career pirates. See, here's the thing. All this has been under a smokescreen of prevent illegal drugs from poisoning Americans, prevent fake Gucci handbags from being sold, and prevent, you know, career pirates from selling mass copies of American, you know, films still in the theater, pirating them in China. But under that is all this other stuff that has nothing to do with that could really destroy the internet as we know it. And the problem is the language is so vague that it doesn't disallow the rest of that. It's written such that it would make YouTube illegal and, you know, Wikipedia and even Google to a certain extent illegal, because it's impossible to police all that content every second. It's impossible to censor it all. And most importantly, it removes any concept of fair use, because not only are you guilty before proven innocent, you're pulled off the entire internet before you can mount a legal defense if someone just accuses you of having material that is not your own copyright. But it doesn't do anything to actually stop the pirates, because the real career pirates making the DVDs, burning them and selling them on blankets on the street, are already completely circumventing any notion of this. They've got their VPNs, they've got their IP. You can just type in the IP address and you can get to that site. So the big piracy veil of we're losing the international market for Hollywood film and movies because it's being sold for pirates. That's not helped at all. The only thing they're going to do is stop maybe a handful of the most absolutely casual of home theater pirates, who probably wouldn't even be purchasing that movie in the first place if they really wanted to see it that badly. And at the same time, harming YouTube, Facebook, any kind of user generated content hosted site. So really, it doesn't even do what it claims to set out to do.
The reality is that the movie, film, and music industry has never made so much money in their entire history.
Beg to differ on that.
Right, Christopher, our audio man who works in audio production, is going to come with the camera.
Well, not just audio production. I actually work at an indie record label. That's my day job.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
And?
It's tough. The problem is there is no consensus amongst in the independent sector, even on this topic. The discussions that we've had in the office are that we are displeased, and it's been mirrored across the industry in the UK and as well as in the States. The industry bodies who represent the independent sector, and there's a huge amount of indies. You might not realize there's three major labels can afford to lobby the most. So they get their version of the laws usually passed. The indies have to just put up with whatever gets left behind in terms of what they can do with the laws, and the majors can afford the best lawyers. So usually what they want goes. So, it's very frustrating because we are at once consumers of material as well as purveyors of material. And it's best of intentions, but it was taken out of our hands and lawyered into such a form so as to make it workable to achieve things which we didn't really want to happen in the first place, such as basically the persecution of people who would probably not be guilty of anything under another law.
Yeah, it's a very contentious issue.
Yeah, we have as many arguments amongst ourselves as we do, with our own legal teams. It's very annoying, and it gets stymied for obvious reasons because it's a bad law. It should not pass. The problem is, as Eric said, it's just going to go back, be remanufactured, and be pumped again. Probably when people are paying attention to something else.
Isn't that what Pippa's about, though, as well? Because Pippa's kind of like Pippa's the horse, but Soap is the cart.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's looking at the cart, but no one's noticing the horse.
You've got fairly big musicians coming out against Soap, and Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails has come out against it. Radiohead have come out against it with good reason, because it's a bad law. And I think now people are more aware of it. What it requires is more good explanations of just why exactly this law is bad and how it will impinge on existing rights. Because no one likes a retroactive removal of rights that already exist. But it's happened before and it'll probably happen again. The interesting thing will be whether there can be a precedent established based on this law or whatever kind of incarnation it becomes that would actually affect people's existing rights. Because passing a law and actually prosecuting based on a law that exists are two different things. Although, I'm stepping on your toes here, Ewan.
But I think the point of what you're saying is the fact that actually this is a law which doesn't need prosecuting to be enforced, and that's wrong.
It worries us. It worries us as content providers. We hate calling it content because it kind of dehumanizes the entire thing. It worries us as people
who
produce things that entertain other people. But, we want to protect our own income because revenue's going down all the time. Revenue's going down, even without a recession. The UK music industry sold more singles but fewer albums. So net income is down. And we're all having to diversify. It's very tough. Very tough out there. But, you can't feel too bad about people who pirate and rampantly pirate. But we don't want to see bad laws pass.
There's a whole new argument here, isn't there?
Just gives us a bad name.
Say again, Dave. And that
our albums aren't what they were 20 years ago. I don't mean the quality of the music, although I think there's a point in that somewhere. It's about people.
Thank
buying.
You, you old fart. You can't. Do you know the problem is you can't hear the words anymore.
Exactly.
It's all just noise. It's all just noise these days.
But people buy one track at a time, don't they? In the old days, you buy an album because you had to buy an album to get the rest of it. But you could like two tracks on an album. You buy the two tracks, not the album.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
I mean, hang on a second, because KTEL for years used to advertise in the 70s that this was only available from KTEL. It was not available in the shops. And it was the country classics of such and such, or it was the hard rock driving classics of so and so. And they'd play you four tracks during the 30-second advert, and you go, oh, Christ, I'm buying that. So you'd buy it and you'd get it back and you'd hear those four tracks and they'd be interspersed throughout 20 tracks and the other 20 you'd go, who? What? Never heard of them. And a couple of tracks you might go, oh, that sounds all right, but the rest were just crap. That's a crap.
Well, a la carte downloading was at once the saviour and the demise of the music industry as we all knew it. And I say we all knew it. I think I'm old enough to kind of appreciate, you know, the pre-download era.
Until you understand KTEL, my friend, you know nothing.
compilation tapes, yeah, I remember those.
Well, in my day, it was home taping is killing music t-shirts stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. Same argument.
And what was that, taping off the radio?
Let's not even get started with VCRs, eh?
Look, don't give the kids ideas, man. They don't want them taping off the radio. Next up, they'll be swapping
tapes. Or taping
tapes
off of vinyl records or tape to tape.
Yeah. How many people are buying 99-cent tracks now?
I do.
I think there's a lot. And I think there's a lot buying it because of the fact it's easy to buy and it's reliable. And you've got backup copies now with iCloud and that kind of stuff, the match service. And people will gladly part with their money for something that they feel like they have control over. And this is the interesting part for me with iTunes Match, is that with iTunes Match, they feel like they have the ability to go back to a backup copy and they haven't got to worry about proving that they originally downloaded this in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you don't get that with a lot of other services. And I think this is where the movie industry's got to be really careful, because with the movie industry, they give you this digital, you know, you can have a digital copy. Here's your DVD, here's your Blu-ray, and here's your digital copy. Put the code into iTunes and we'll give you your digital copy. And there's a bit of me that sits and thinks, I'm going to put that code in, and actually the quality of the movie that comes down isn't as good as I can make off the DVD, let alone ripping off the Blu-ray. And the second thing is that if things go horribly wrong, can I get that back? And the third thing is, actually, I spend a lot of time in hotels with a laptop, and what I'd really like is a copy here on my main computer, and I'd really like a copy on my laptop. Oh, no, because that's piracy. We're not letting you do that. You're not having that. There's no way we're going to give you that kind of stuff.
There is another aspect as
well. In which case, tell you what, shove it up your ass, and I'll go and I'll take it off the DVD that I've just bought. And if I can't take it off the DVD, I'll go to news groups and I'll download a perfectly good copy of it, maybe even an HD copy, just to make it feel even worse. And I'll stick it on whatever damn machine I like. Yeah. And that's because you tried to restrict me. You tried to control me. You tried to stop me. You tried to tell me I was a bad person. I'll tell you what, if you're going to tell me I'm a bad person anyway, might as well be the bad person.
There is another aspect as well, is what happens if you don't use iTunes or you don't have access to iTunes?
Who doesn't use iTunes? Sorry, Sarah, I'm lost now.
Sarah doesn't.
I don't. I work at a label. I don't use iTunes.
I'm joking.
Have to.
I don't use iTunes either.
So anyway, just to get back to SOPA, the one thing that struck me as very interesting was that the sites that did dedicate a lot of time and energy to talking about it and making it those words accessible to a mainstream audience, like Google did. Google didn't take down their service from the blackout, but they did put a link to a page that they put up describing SOPA and PIPA in plain English and trying to get people involved. But I noticed that when I saw sites like that on Google and Facebook and Wikipedia, the language was very vague. It was strongly worded, but vague. It was like, this destroys the internet. Join the 300,000 people. Join the 15 million. Join the make your voice heard. And it never said what the bills did or what was bad about them. There were zero specifics. And what occurred to me is that they really did have something to hide in a good way, in a way that I can get behind. But they do have a thornier argument to make than it seems like they do. Because the reason that those guys, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Wikipedia, the reason that they would be upset about this is because it would put an undue burden on them, an impossible burden, really, to monitor every single item of anything that comes up, even on the Google search engine, the main Google.com page, would link would have to be censored there. And YouTube already filters or cross checks. What do they get? Like 48 hours of video uploaded per minute. And already that's cross-referenced against their digital fingerprints of millions and millions of hours of video and music provided by the big labels. So that it would put a huge burden on them. But the thing that they don't want to say is that they really do, especially YouTube, make a huge amount of their money, and Wikipedia off, or Wikipedia doesn't make money, but they get a huge number of their views, let's say, off of material that they don't own the copyright to. However, it usually is fair use, and it opens up the argument, or rather the discussion that we should have about whether or not something like YouTube, a universal repository for all kinds of video that's been off the air, out of print, unpublished. You can look up a random TV commercial from the 70s, and most likely it's on YouTube. It used to be that way with any kind of film. They're pulling, you know, major films like that off of YouTube, you know, through automated procedures. But don't you think that there is a value to something like YouTube and something like that, where if you just make it so that any instance of anything is automatically pulled down at the expense of the company being sued or blocked off the internet, taken out of existence, off the face of the internet, due to one infringement, it would destroy fair use, and you couldn't put anything up there unless you actually own every legitimate use to it, which is even more than mainstream media is afforded. Look at even The Daily Show uses clips very liberally from movies and DVDs that they rip, just in the interest of commentary. If they posted those same videos to YouTube, they would get pulled, blocked, and potentially sued through an automated process, because there's no human taking the time to evaluate fair use.
But I think the thing is as well, though, if you look at what Pippa and Soper are trying to do, are they really saying that they're going to threaten YouTube? Well, as long as YouTube stays on its current format, there is plenty of stuff there available for YouTube to say, well, you know, there's DMCA takedowns and those kind of things which can apply. A lot of the studios have got instant kill back doors through YouTube as well, as so they can take content down at their discretion, and YouTube have let them. So the interesting thing as well is the mega upload thing that's occurred just today, that's been done anyway. So I mean, that's the kind of thing that Soper and Pippa would have done. Why do you need Soper and Pippa if you're going to do that anyhow, which is what's happened with them?
Right. And that's a very valid point, too. Here's a question that I thought of just randomly the other day, thinking about this. And what do you guys think? You know, go back 100 years, just in your mind, before there was digital anything, but before we had even, there may have been wax cylinders, but, you know, before music and any other, when books were the only real media and you had a small number of books. And when you read those books and you were done with those books, the only polite thing to do would be to give them or loan them to family and friends. And you'd say, here, I have a book that you don't. You may read this. Now, did anyone back then think, when they were reading a book as loaned to them by a friend, that they were stealing money out of the hands of content creators?
Yeah, but that's not a fair analogy.
Is it?
No, that's an incorrect analogy, mate, because what you're talking about is a consumer item that you've purchased and you're passing the consumer item on. The analogy that you are looking for is one where you take the book and you photocopy it and give the photocopy to your family.
Only if it's a book that you intend to read many, many times, which most books, if you think about, you know, traditional libraries, not reference books, but just like novels, like things that people used to consume in mass before even DVDs were the main commodity of media. Most books are one-time reads. So can you honestly say that if a friend says, here, I just read this book, it's great, give it a read and then give it back to me or donate it to someone, I don't care. Why do you not have to morally look at that and say, boy, thank you, sir, but I cannot read this book lest I be considered a copyright criminal any more than I can download a movie from BitTorrent, watch it once, and delete it rather than buying it myself? How is that different than borrowing a friend's copy?
That's wholly different, because, I mean, if you own a DVD and you purchase it and the DVD is in the box and you give it to your next door neighbor and say, feel free, have a watch, and they watch that and give you the DVD back, there is nothing wrong with that in the direct copy content license, because you're not making an illegal copy of it. There's no difference in the analogy with the book there. They might put in the license that you're not supposed to do that, but they're never going to enforce that, even if they did, and that's not morally what we're talking about. That is not a fair comparison between the two. If you were to say, I have a book and I make a copy of that book and I keep that copy of that book for myself and I give the original away to my next door neighbor to read, That is copyright infringement because it's the copyright on the original copy that's the issue. Nothing stops you from taking the physical CD and, providing you haven't made a copy and retained it for yourself, passing that to your next door neighbor for a listen and then giving it back to you.
But my point is, not everything is the value of all media is not in its repeat viewership. I think most movies that we see in our lives, we only see once. Most video games you play, I mean, most any kind of content or media, or books especially, you read once. So having a permanent copy on yourself of that book, for 99% of the material we consume, is not of value. It's the first and only one-time run-through that the money would be spent on. And I think that we can't do a double standard like that, where we say it's okay to watch a DVD and give it back to our friend, but it's not okay to download the movie from BitTorrent, because morally, I know legally it's different, but that's my point. Morally
that's different as well.
Pragmatically, it's the same thing.
No, you give a dime to the content creator.
No,
because you have taken the copy, you have made another copy of it, and you've transmitted that second copy to a third party who's not paid for it. That is out and out theft. I've got no problem with that, and I don't think the MPAA and I don't think the RAA have got an issue with me. Me and Chris sitting talking in the pub. Chris says, really, Nine Inch Nails album, I really fancy it. I say, oh, I bought a copy of that. I've got a copy. Here you go. Have a listen, see what you think. And then he goes, oh, that's brilliant, and he gives it me back. Now, if he just gives me that back after he's had a listen, there is no breach of copyright there whatsoever. There is no breaking of the law, and there's no breaking of the moral standards associated with it. If Chris makes a copy for himself from my CD and then gives me my original CD back, Chris has broken the law, and he should get the full force of the law for that. But I mean, Chris, you work in music. You say what you think here. I give you my CD. You have a listen and go, wow, that's great. Thanks very much.
I get it totally. It's something that I thought about at length. I won't bore you with comment at length. I'll try not to anyway. But the problem is, there's been a change in perception as to the value of something, in that things are now fundamentally intangible. Your MP3s, noughts and ones, but a book exists and you can't just copy and paste it. It's really difficult because, something has a value and then I'll consume that value and it's exhausted. The very limited reread value in a book that's on my bookshelf, although I appreciate having the actual item. But that conflicts with the law as it exists, which is frankly in need of a redo in the UK. It's just so decrepit. It came from a time when you simply couldn't almost wish something into being as a duplicate, and there it was, in the snap of your fingers. The law, as is defined, to as I understand it, is that you have an item, you give the item to someone else, effectively the ownership of that item is transferred, and so there's no net loss, but of course you make a copy and you can calculate the loss as long as you can calculate how many copies have been made, which is why watermarking became so popular a couple of years ago in the music industry. I wish there was, and it's wishful thinking because it'll never happen, but I wish there was some way you could track the usage of something and then monetize that and credit the rights holders appropriately. But it's just never going to happen because there's so many conflicting systems and Apple would never agree. So, whatever you come up with is dead in the water to begin with. I just wish that UK law enshrined some kind of personal right to give things, pass things on, because there isn't. There's no fair use in the UK law. And that bugged me for years until they explicitly allowed the copying to a personal device for, listening. There's no backup law in the UK.
Can I just say something on this?
Of course.
I totally agree with your side of this on this, Ewan. However, when you cross the line between that and software, where there's an inherent license which says you may not resell this, and in a lot of cases you register the use of that software.
But hang on, because the function of that software has been transferred to your computer to function as an operating software.
Yes,
and
I know.
Then when you give the disk away and someone else installs it, that is a copy of that operating software.
Yeah, I know. Supposing I buy a piece of software from a store or online, I register it in my name and I use it, and then I decide, oh, I don't want to use this, so I delete it, and then I think, well, okay, I'll give it to somebody else. That's actually wrong, because I already registered that in my name. Yes. And it breaches the license agreement. Mm-hmm. Even though there's still only the single copy in existence, which is the same as what you, the scenario you painted with the DVD and the book.
There's been an erosion of second sale rights anyway. The whole thing of, people always, as I interpret it, people always used to think that you buy a CD, you own the music. You don't. You own the license to reproduce that music, and the format that it's distributed on happens to be a physical medium. So people have always thought that they've had a right to do it, when in fact it's not. It's a license granted to them, which can be revoked at any time, which is why I always find the copyright clauses on promo discs to be laughable, in that the label can recall a copy at any point. It's such a nonsense. The problem is, with the electronic licensing, that although you might in law be able to transfer a license to someone, quite often the companies don't want you to anyway, and so they won't actually give you a mechanism by which to do it. That's a whole other matter.
Mm. But the whole environment is changing anyway, isn't it?
But I mean,
I was going to say, we've got this. We've got this environment where, with mobile apps, where Google and Apple actually have a kill switch, so they can actually kill it.
Yeah.
So we've actually achieved, the software industry has achieved that method of recalling that license once it's actually already been it's in use.
But there is no way on God's green earth that the RIAA, the MPAA, the British Phonographic Industry, any of those people are trying to stop me saying to Chris, come round, have a listen to this, mate. Do you want to borrow me CD? Do you like it? Yeah, have it back. I'm going to go and buy one myself, he says. There's no way on God's green earth they're attempting to stop that with any of the legislation that's passed in any form whatsoever. And SOPA and PIPA are not trying to stop that kind of thing either. What they're trying to stop is probably a decent aim, but the trouble is the way that they've written it is that they can do what the hell they like whenever they want to whomever they want without any justification, any proof, any evidence, and that's bad law. That's the point.
Traditional media is nearly dead. You use iTunes.
I don't know, it's squirming.
Well, you use iTunes Match, Ewan, yeah? Everything you upload to iTunes Match comes back to your computer with your email address in the ID tag, the MP3 tag, on every single track. So a little sort of, it's DRM-free, but your name, your email address is actually on that track. So that should prevent some illegal sharing of music. You can't share ebooks that you purchase for yourself on iBooks or Kindle. Give them away permanently, that is, because your purchase details are tied into that purchase. Apps for Android and for Apple, only you can use them unless you share your username for the app store that you bought them from. So we're being tied in now to publishers already with new digital media. The whole way we used to purchase media is going to be long gone in 5 to 10 years' time.
I have it on good authority that Amazon are actually working on something to allow you to give away your ebooks.
Good. Yes. You'd love to be able to donate them to a third world country.
No. You can actually say.
Good point in the chat room.
They're supposed to be working on something which would enable you to hand over your ebook, your copy of your ebook, to a designated person that you designate, just as you would in the scenario that you painted with the physical book, Ewan.
That DRM scheme works as long as the infrastructure is in place, but that means that every time you open your document, it's going to be pinging an authentication server. And if Amazon was to abandon that scheme, as happened with all the Windows Media protected audio, it just falls apart.
As unless happens with all EA games, of a key. All Ubisoft games.
Sony Music, I think.
Yeah.
And my point was simply that there is no obviously there is a legal difference, but I think that needs to be reevaluated because there is no, in my opinion, and I know you guys disagree, there is no practical difference between borrowing something, even including that Amazon mechanism where you lend out your digital license and then you get it back after a time, or you give it away or you resell it. There's no tangible difference between from a money changing hands perspective, from borrowing a book or a movie, watching or reading it once and giving it back versus pirating it, watching or reading it once and deleting it.
No, because copyright law was never expected to have to deal with intangible product. And so it needs to be scrapped and rewritten, but that will happen for another 30 years.
Copyright law needs to play catch up, doesn't it? Yeah.
They will fight to the death until they are just swamped.
Why all the streaming services are going to get even more popular, like Netflix, like Spotify, because the amount per film or music track is tiny, but you listen to it once or watch it once and then that's it. Forget about it.
But the thing about that, David, is that's controlled. And that's what the movie companies and the music companies will love that, because they can then control what you can and can't see, and the fact that you're not actually keeping a copy of that film or that.
I agree, but I think now we're getting Netflix over here, what, $5.99 a month, less than half the price of one DVD. What are you going to do? Keep buying DVDs that sit on your shelf, or watch as much content as you want in 1 month?
I think one of the things that you've got a real blurring with that's an issue is things like PVRing via the computer. That's the good example for me is iPlayer. There are certain programs on iPlayer that allow me to watch them on iPlayer for 7 days, and then after 7 days they disappear. Well, I can be out on the road for 7 days quite happily and not get something. So I use Get iPlayer Automator. If there's anything that I really, really want to watch, I rip it down using iPlayer Automator and encode it, stick it in iTunes, which it does automatically. I then eventually get round to watching it, and I watched it, I delete it. No different than I'm doing with my Sky Box or my TV.
That is illegal, yeah.
Well, it's highly illegal.
That's highly illegal in like seven different ways.
Yeah, that's illegal. What I'm doing is illegal. I'm not denying that that's illegal. Is what I'm doing amoral?
No, it's not, and that's my point. It's not. I really don't believe that whenever you have a law that seems unjust like that, that it's okay to just say, "Well, they're not going to come after me."
I'm not saying hang on. I mean, the law is about enforcement. Criminal law is about getting caught, and civil law is about enforcement. There's no getting away from that. You can write down all the contract requirements that you want. If you're not prepared to enforce those, they don't exist, and that's the end of it. That's the finish of the discussion. I am publicly stating that I use Get iPlayer Automator because I would love to watch it within 7 days, but I ain't got the time. I'm a father of two running three businesses. There is no way on God's green earth I'm going to get to that. And when I do get to it and I sit and watch it, I really enjoy watching it. I really value the BBC for it. I love paying my license fee. I think they are a fantastic organisation because of the unique way in which they're funded. But I'm not trying to steal their content. I'm just trying to frigging watch it. And when I've watched it, I delete it. Now, I am doing nothing wrong if no one comes and prosecutes me or sues me.
Well, the distinction here is, though, that the interpretation of law and what you're doing is you are duplicating, you're not distributing. And it's not something that you wouldn't have otherwise had access to. The means by which you watch it.
Hang on. Let's just hang on a second. If I set my Skybox to record that thing because I'm not stupid and I'm not a numpty and I have got a brain that actually remembers to do things, which I haven't got... let's take Sherlock, three episodes of Sherlock. I can record those on the Skybox as a PVR and I can leave them on there for the lifespan of that machine, and the BBC will never come and prosecute or sue me. I've done nothing wrong. It's not DRM'd.
ADHD.
No, if you've got a digital output, you can rip off your Skybox. Yeah.
Let me play devil's advocate. Why do you think that you're entitled to watch that film or TV show whenever and however you want on any medium that you choose? Why is that your right?
I'm not breaching copyright in what I'm doing.
But how can you live with yourself, Ewan? I mean, if they want you to pay for each instance that you put it on, if they want you to pay for each DVD, pay for each iTunes download, pay for each iPlayer instance, how can you live with yourself breaking such a moral and legal code?
I sat and watched Frozen Planet on PVR, and as soon as I finished watching it, I went out and bought the DVD when it was available. They got a sale out of me because they let me watch it. And if they hadn't have done that, and they didn't do it, I did it. But if I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have watched Frozen Planet at all. I wouldn't have got to have seen it. I wouldn't have gone and got the Blu-ray for it.
I think the difference here as well is that just the amount of time that this has been going on, and the fact that as a license payer, you are entitled to enjoy this content that's produced by the BBC for the license payers, and added to the fact that the BBC never really did anything about it after people began to do these things, so record them and then watch them at their leisure, means that it's unenforceable now because British law interprets statute. It doesn't rely on the word of statute.
Yeah, to a large degree.
And the difference here is if you copy and paste an MP3, it's effortless and it has a direct effect negatively.
There's an interesting point from Russ in the chat room. And yet you're a license fee payer. You've paid for the content effectively. I actually record stuff using my TV card, re-encode it and keep it. No different than I would have done if I was using a VCR back in the day. Russ, you're actually breaking the law there, and you were breaking the law when you did it with the VCR, mate. But they just never chose to enforce on it. And that's the key part. If you don't choose to enforce, what I'm doing is not wrong.
So as long as you don't get caught.
No. I said choose to enforce.
Get caught is criminal. As well.
Here we go. There's a separation. Getting caught is criminal. Choosing to enforce is civil. Because copyright is not a criminal offence in the UK. It's a civil offence.
Oh, it is here. Streaming now. If you get caught streaming something, if you get caught giving something away. This is why I get outraged about this stuff. If you take a TV show that was on the air for free last night, totally for free, we don't pay a service fee, it's just on the air, comes into our homes, utterly free. If you turn around and you rebroadcast that at the same time the next day, you can get up to 10 years in prison.
Yeah, but here's the thing, mate. No one gave a toss about what you did about keeping it yourself and watching it yourself. And when you watched it yourself, they're worried about you redistributing it. And that's the key point, is that all of the bodies and all of the laws are worried about redistribution. So they should be. And absolutely, they should enforce against that. I'm 100% against them. Mm. I don't do that. I keep it for myself to watch when I've got convenient times to sit and watch it, because I'm a busy guy with two kids and a business. And I just need to do it when I want to do it, when I'm sat in a hotel room and Brian Cox isn't on the television that night, which is pretty rare, I admit. But
no, and I'm in complete agreement there. I'm the only reason I'm giving you a hard time, because you didn't like my first analogy that there's no difference. Because I think morally and tangibly, if no money gets back to the artists, if no money gets back to the content creators, if it's a one-time watch and you either return it to the Redbox kiosk or you give it back to your friend or relative, we have to look at these things differently. If it was free yesterday on TV, why is the next day worthy of jail time? I think those are the reasons that you get these very confused arguments, both from consumers, from media companies, and from hosting providers like YouTube and Google and Wikipedia. I think that's why it's so jumbled up. There are so many avenues to what is branded as so-called piracy, and there are so many definitions that shouldn't be under a single umbrella term.
Absolutely. I mean, I get a DVD, I buy it from the shops, I have trouble ripping it, I go into Newsgroups and I take it down and I put it on the server, but I've got the original. And I don't do that. I don't steal any movies. I just get ones down that I can't rip because I'm not technologically minded.
The problem is the content creators can't distinguish between a legitimate download and someone who's getting it for free.
Well, that's not legitimate download either. I'm not saying it is. Chat room says I'm winning, though, by the way, Eric. DT in the chat room says...
If I had more time.
Who's the bloke wearing the Ewan mask tonight? Because he's talking some sense. Thank you, mate.
Ewan is on fire tonight.
On fire. Huzzah. Have we got any cool thingies? Chris, we jumped on you last minute. Do you want a few more minutes, or have you not got one at all? Or have you got anything cool?
I think we should do an after show on it. Eric, you and me should just discuss this at length.
Oh, man, that could go on till the wee hours.
I've got plenty of beer.
I haven't.
I can bring you some.
David, have you got a cool thing for us?
I have, yeah, hang on.
Ugh. Oh, blimey. He's bought a sledge.
No. Is that working?
Have you made this yourself?
Yes.
No.
Was this your project in IT?
Is that an iCade?
Oh, no.
Oh, wait, hang on. This is infringing use.
Oh, yeah, don't show the screen.
No, no, it's not. It's off the App Store, $2.99.
Okay, we get the idea. Now, that's
there you go.
Is that
that's
an
the iCade?
You got that from...
PC World.
$79.99, is it?
I pay 39 quid for it.
Good man.
They're at PC World for 39 quid.
Yeah.
Right. That's where I'm going tomorrow morning then. Stuff the Daily
Space
Show.
Invaders on it.
Yeah. I've got iMame on it as well, which was pulled from the App Store. So I got it quick.
Oh, man.
It's brilliant because it's got a Bluetooth panel thing for the joystick and buttons and everything. And I'm just reliving my retro youth at the moment.
That's when gameplay meant something.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Proper
it's
levels.
It really is.
Did anyone ever get to the end of any of those games?
No.
You can get to the end of Assassin's Creed. You can get to the end of Ghost Warrior. You can get to the end of Ghost Sniper or something like that. No one ever got to the end of Galaxia. No one ever got to the end of Donkey Kong. No one ever got to the end of Space Invaders.
Not without roll after roll of fake quarters.
Exactly. You never did it on the real machine. The Acorn was just an emulator. No one did it on the real machine.
You take that back.
It's a hollow victory, Woods. It's a hollow victory.
I was only 8. I was exhausted by the end of it. They didn't have any pocket money anyway.
When I was 8, mate, there was no computer games. I had a Binatone. I need to get that. What? My parents' loft, a Binatone.
I had a Grandstand, I think.
Yeah, I had a Binatone.
Never heard that word.
That had a gun. Binatone. It was an American thing, and it was in an orange case. And we've done this before on the show, but I'll find a picture. But it was like a triangle, slopey thing, and it played Pelota, which was like the tennis thing. And then it did the solo one against the wall, and you could put the angle on it, and it would suddenly start going vertical. And it had a gun that came with it. It had a big long barrel that you screwed in, and you could shoot it. Brilliant. Quality film. I'll find it. I shall bring it and I will show it on the show. It's up in my mum and dad's loft at their place. Well done. Good pick, David. I want one of those. I will be going to PC World tomorrow and buying that. Sarah, what's your pick, mate?
If they've got Space Invaders on that, I'd be very tempted to as well.
They've got Space Inversion.
No, it's got to be the original Space Invaders. So I remember playing that when I was 16 when I was
at college. I have got it, but then I'd have to admit to being a pirate.
I might come your if I go out and buy one, I might come your way looking for a copy then.
Oh dear, no. Sarah, anyway, what's your cool thing, girl?
My cool thing is we've actually already slightly touched on it tonight, is this thing, which I absolutely love. My Amazon Kindle I got for Christmas. And I've already read a couple of books on it, and I don't think I'm ever gonna buy a physical book again. It is amazing.
And you could have given that to your friend, you see.
I know, I could have done.
And not breach copyright.
No, I know. But I've downloaded a load of books, bought loads of books on it, and once I'd figured out how to put gift vouchers on there so I could register gift vouchers on Amazon so I could actually buy them without rather than paying for them. I've been well away with it. I've already read one complete book and halfway through a second one in the last 2 weeks or so. So yeah, absolutely loving it.
I bought Sharon a Kindle for Christmas, and she said the other day, I said, "How are you getting on with the Kindle?" She said, "I really love it." And I said, "That's good." She said, "I wanted to hate it." Now, what do you mean you wanted to hate it? When you gave it me, because it was technology and I'm not a technology person, she said, "I wanted to hate it, but I love it."
The only thing that did make me give me some food for thought tonight was obviously, I think it was Chris mentioned about the proprietary nature of the ebooks. And obviously with my views about iTunes and things like that, that's sort of given me a bit of pause for thought, but I'm generally not worried about it because I think it's so useful. And to be able to have so many books in one place is just fantastic, especially reference books. As any of you guys out there who are programmers will know that computer books come and go, and this is a great way so you're not wasting trees.
Mm. No, it is. The Kindle is superb.
Absolutely. But going on holiday is a revelation, isn't it? With one of those, rather than carrying four or five hardbacks or paperbacks, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm. Very, very good. Very, very, very good thing. Eric, what have you got for us, mate?
Anything? I have something way better than that. It is a small bag of air that came with a recent Amazon shipment. As you can see, it's a good packing size. You can use it to secure most things, and it's very small, so you can put it in your pocket. You can make little balloons out of it for like a children's party.
Oh,
and
that's sweet.
If you could probably put like a Capri Sun bag of juice in here if you punctured a hole in it and then like sipped out of the top. So all kinds of uses for small bag of air.
Dude, you've been coming on the show for 18 months. That's like the third pick you've ever properly done.
Well, no, that's still not a proper pick. That's a joke.
No, mate, based on what you've come out with in the last year and a half, that's pretty good. What have you got?
Next time you'll be bringing snow along to sell to Eskimos.
That is what I have. I don't have anything.
You haven't got anything. See, that's what I mean.
I just picked a random thing off his desk.
Off the floor.
Have you got the video feed on, Eric?
On the floor. What?
Have you got the video thing? The video feed on.
Yeah.
Right. This is a Binatone. It's not a particularly great picture, but that is a Binatone console that I had. That is exactly it, with an orange base, black top, and orange buttons. And it was gorgeous, mate. It was very playable. I used to play that to no end.
Is that was it an actual? Did it display some kind of video output?
No, it was an aerial socket. It had a coax socket that went out into the back of your television.
Is that the one with the tennis game, Ewan?
Duck shooting, isn't it?
It had tennis on the top, and then you had solo tennis and pelota, and then you had like a double squash game thing, and then there was a football thing that had four paddles on it, and then there was a skeet shooting and clay pigeon shooting game as well. There you go, on the bottom right there.
I've never heard of that. Did that predate the Magnavox Odyssey?
Mate, that predated Moses and the Ten Commandments. It was
Binnertone was UK only. That's why I've probably not heard of it.
Yeah, I thought they made phones,
didn't they?
But that was it. It was a quality game, absolutely. And I've got it at home at my parents' house, and I pulled it out about 8 years ago and plugged it into their old TV, and it still worked. So it should still work. I'm going to have a go and see. The bigger problem you're going to get is finding something that will do coax soon. There you go. That's a bin time. Chris,
get convert.
Did you really
knocking at the door, I thought the crazy lady had returned.
Oh, no, bad luck. Did you really have a pick, or was that you just showing something off?
This is my... It's. What do you mean? It's the first addition to my evil lair.
Thank you, mate.
It's great, and it's USB powered.
Oh, it's a USB-powered plasma globe.
Yeah, that classifies it. It's a cool gadget.
That's fine. That's good. Cool. Okay.
But look, you can do this. Oh, I've electrocuted myself. Oh, it's so painful. And then it's not.
No, okay.
I'm easily pleased. What can I say?
Good man. End of the week.
Turn the lights off, Chris. Obviously, then I've got
a self-steering cup, but that's not new.
Okay.
So,
my cool thing is the Canon G12. There you go. Now, why is that a cool thing? Because actually it's a camera that's about a year old. It's a cool thing because I bought a Canon G9 and it was the biggest turd that I ever had. It's the worst camera I ever bought. It took a pretty crappy picture when you blew it up to a decent size. It shot really, really crappy video and it was just disgusting. It was of no value whatsoever. I would certainly never have taken a commercial image with it and tried to sell it to anyone. This week, because I gave the G9 a good kicking on last week's photo show, someone that I know said, my firm's bought a G12 and it doesn't do stop motion, which the G9 does. Would you swap? Might do. So they gave me the G12 and they've got my shitty G9. I've got to bleep that now. Bugger. And there you go. It's got a little twizzly off-screen thingy that's there, look, which is gorgeous. And it does up to 6400 ISO. And the video on it is awesome. It's 720p, but it looks really, really good, and it upscales well when you flick it through a video thing. And I've been sat in a hotel room on Wednesday doing a bit of work, and I thought, oh, I'll get this out and shoot some test shots with it. The shots are great. They stand up really well next to my full commercial camera. So there you go. I don't know how much it costs. Mine didn't cost me anything. Cost me 2 years of looking at, or 4 years of looking at, a really awful camera. But there you go. Canon G12, well worth the money. A good, good buy. And if you can get them cheap on eBay, definitely get a hold of one. I would recommend.
How much did the G9 cost, Ewan?
The G9 cost me nearly £500, and that was probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe more.
Probably comparable in price, I would think. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have done the exchange.
If anyone can tell me what the G12 costs, then...
389, Amazon.
389, buy it. Worth every penny. Worth every single penny. Thank you, Claw. So no, hang on, you've put Canon Power Shot in there. It's not a Power Shot.
So I've got a G10. It's got a lovely metal body. Do you want to swap it for the G12?
No.
You sure?
Pretty sure.
It's always lovely in the hand.
Got a Kodak 110.
Oh, it is a G12. Sorry, Claw. Yep. Carl's put it in the chat room. 389. Say again, David.
Kodak 110. Swap me for your G12.
No.
I've got four cans of Fujifilm 35mm in the fridge if you want that.
Absolutely. I haven't got anything to put them in.
That sounds like a Fujifilm opportunity.
It's a sign of the times, Kieran.
The answer, what have you got that you can put a 35mm roll of film in? A fridge?
I've got a 35mm camera.
Actually, so have I. I've got an old Motorola point and shoot.
Actually, yeah. Let's make that my cool thing.
Actually, I've got my dad's Rolleiflex, and it still takes a gorgeous picture, but I haven't put any film in it for a long time. There we go. While Christopher rummages in the background, making a great deal of noise.
Is he looking for a cool thing for Eric?
Things are exploding. We can hear a beer bottles.
You get yourself ready quietly, Chris, and I'll do the advert for the sponsors, so please don't talk over it. This podcast wouldn't be possible, and all the others on the network wouldn't be, without UK2. They have got co-location services, hosting services. They do VPSs. They do dedicated servers. They do tons of stuff. If you want a presence on the web, These people do absolutely everything associated with it. You can get everything that you want from them. And here's the best part. No matter what you buy from them, if you're using it, even if you're an existing customer, it doesn't make any difference. You can use the offer code BAGELTECH. And the offer code BAGELTECH will get you 15% off whatever you purchase from them. Not 10%, not 5%. 15%. Use the click through on our website. Go to bageltechnews.com. Scroll down on the left hand side. There's a tracking link there. Even if you want to sign into your account, just go through there. They'll know we sent you and you're a returning customer. And then whenever you buy anything, use that offer code in the coupon section. If you're transferring in a DNS, make sure that you use the DNS management code, which is BagelDNS, and that'll get rid of the DNS management charge completely. You won't pay that at all. So, and you can use both of those codes. So there you go. UK2.net, they keep us afloat. They absorb an enormous amount of data that floods off our servers, and we'd be lost without them. So please support them, because by supporting them, you support us. We couldn't do any of this without them. Thanks, UK2. Chris, what have you got for us, mate? Then you've done...
It's a vintage Canon A1.
An A1. Now that was there was a bit of a kicking today on Petapixel, because they told Fujifilm had made a retro camera and they showed it next to the old one, and all they've done is change the top to silver. But there is certain something about having a silver top on a camera that's proper 70s, mate.
How about having a flash that's four times the size of the camera body? That looks ridiculous.
I was thinking that.
You be
too
quiet.
Eric.
And a bonus, an Ixus, which still works.
Is that the 2 megapixel?
Is it the 2? I have. It's the Ixus 3, or the III, as they want to call it.
No.
And as luck would have it, in the camera.
It's like Antiques Roadshow, this.
You've got a piece of paper stuck in your camera.
Mm.
Is that what to remind you what you stuck paper. In?
Yeah, that's the film that's in it.
Right. How old is that?
It's not new, put it like that.
How many shots have you got left before you can get it developed?
I don't know.
It's probably
you better hurry.
You're getting. You I was going to say you're getting.
You still develop these things.
You're getting close to the period where getting it developed is going to be more expensive than buying a digital camera.
Yeah,
it probably already is.
And all flashes, mate, are too big. There you go. That was my pick the other week. A Metz.
I'm not overcompensating.
Beautiful camera. Very good. I was going to test for it, but I don't know how to test for it. Oh, there we go. Oh, that's really frigged something. No. How long's that been up then?
Just come up.
Beautiful. Let's flash thing in. Right, we're done. Where can we get a hold of you, Christopher?
Well, if you go to bageltechnews.com and go to Bagel Tech Nonsense, we're on there. I'm chriswoods.co.uk, Christopher W on the Twitters.
Good man. Thank you very much for stepping in at the last minute. You got like 2 minutes notice before you came on here. Do apologize.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much. David, where can we get you, mate?
Podcast every week, iconfessimageek.com, on Twitter at iconfessimageek.
Right, we need to make sure that you tweet out prolifically when you go past Will Green's count.
Oh, I will.
Because he's been doing it for 10 years.
Mm. He started when it was black and white, didn't he?
He did, that's right. Sarah, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK and on Google Plus at +SarahJaneUK.
Oh, you're on Google Plus now, you venture.
I have been since the Bagel Tech Bash, thanks, Mr. Hart.
Right, I haven't seen you in the Hangout yet.
Yeah, okay. That's mainly because I'm mainly using it on my Ubuntu PC, which hasn't really got that set up, so I should get around to using it on my my little media PC and then it'll be fine.
Okay. And Eric, how you doing, mate? Where can we get you?
That would be twitter.com/EricLanigan and EricLanigan.com, EricLanigan.
Just in case you're not sure. Thanks, mate.
Just in case.
And the very last note goes to Mr. James Hart, who should have occupied top left where Christopher is. But I got in the van at Southampton knowing absolutely nothing, started driving back home, and pulled up and sat at the desk here, and there's something about James being in hospital and not being able to come on the show, to which I replied, well, stuff the show, mate.
I don't believe
what
this.
What on earth are you doing in hospital? But
James is having a tweet up in hospital.
Who's there?
I suppose some random people that he's probably met, but only I just James seen his last Hart. Tweet.
What has he put? Crazy hospital tweet up scenario with Brenning, Sparky and C... The escape. So he's staying in overnight. James, bloody well get yourself well and stuff the show. Just get better, mate. And that goes for all five of us. I'm definitely sure of that. We've missed you, mate, but I'd rather you were in hospital getting well. Sort it out.
Get better soon, James.
He was tweeting about an escape plan and getting out, and I told him he was an arse. Don't be a bloke. Stay there. Get well.
He's a motorbike. And
let them probe you however they want. They're not aliens. We'll be back again next week with the big show as normal. It'll be back at 9:30 p.m. on Thursday. Tomorrow we've got the Max show at 3:30. Andy Anatko is going to be here, and we've got the photo show at 2 o'clock, and I'm the only one for that at the moment. So that might be something special. There'll be something on, even if it's just me picking my nose. And then it'll be the weekend. And on Saturday at Old Saltland Rugby Club in Water Orton, I will be playing my first game of rugby for 15 years.
Ooh.
Yeah. I was 30 the last time I had a proper game of rugby, full 80 minutes. I don't think I'll be playing a full 80 minutes. There's 25 of us playing. We're all over 40. Most of us haven't played for at least 10 years. So it should be really awful. We've got the West Midlands pipe band that are going to play before and at half time as well. And there's a load of beer and food on. And it all goes to Help for Heroes, which is a fantastic charity for the British Armed Services. And if you can come up, I'd love to see you. Please, please, please make an effort if you physically can come up. Old Saltlands Rugby Club, Watton Lane in Water Orton. Kickoff's at 2:30. And if you come, your beer's on me. There you go. But as long as you put some money in for the chat. See you next week.